From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Following the mass shooting at an historically African-American church last month in Charleston, South Carolina, a heated national debate has ensued over the meaning and placement of the Confederate battle flag. We're taking your calls to find out what the flag means to Southwest Floridians as we get context and insight from a renowned flag expert. Plus, World Hepatitis Day is coming up later this month. Experts say 5 million Americans could be living with chronic viral hepatitis and that many of them don't even know they're infected. We explore risk factors, screening guidelines, and treatment options for hepatitis, along with the state health department's efforts to prevent and track the spread of infections. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. World Hepatitis Day is coming up July 28th. Ahead of this global public health awareness initiative, we take a closer look at the prevalence of viral hepatitis, risk factors, and treatment options, along with public health efforts here in Florida to prevent the disease and track its spread. But first, we delve into the national conversation over the Confederate battle flag. Following last month's mass shooting at the historically African-American Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, by alleged shooter Dylan Roof, a heated national debate about displaying the Confederate battle flag picked up steam. Images of the alleged shooter holding the flag, along with his manifesto-like rant against non-whites, were on his website that he'd set up. Now, the South Carolina state legislature is considering removal of the Confederate battle flag from the state capitol. Taking that step would require a two-thirds majority vote from members of both legislative chambers. Opponents of the Confederate battle flag have said they see it as a symbol of slavery, racism, white supremacy, or even treason. Supporters say displaying the flag doesn't represent those things, but rather serves as a symbol of Southern history and heritage. Retailers such as Walmart, Amazon, Sears, and eBay have banned the sale of Confederate flag merchandise. Here in Florida, the Tampa Tribune reports a Hillsborough County commissioner is pushing to have a small Confederate battle flag removed from the Hillsborough County Center in downtown Tampa. Other critics are highlighting a large Confederate flag placed near the intersection of I-75 and I-4 by the Sons of the Confederacy. This week in Marion County, commissioners voted unanimously to again fly the Confederate battle flag in front of a government building just weeks after it had been taken down. And on Monday, an activist interrupted an induction ceremony for Florida's Veterans Hall of Fame, making the case that not including Confederate soldiers ignores the state's heritage. Joining me now on the line from Oregon is vexillologist Ted Kay. Vexillology is the scientific study of flags and related emblems. He's a member of the North American Vexillological Association, or NAVA, where he previously served as treasurer and editor of the organization's annual Journal of Academic Vexillological Research. That's titled Raven. He's also author of the book Good Flag, Bad Flag, which serves as a guide for creating the perfect flag for most any organization. Ted Kay, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, and thank you for that kind introduction.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Give us a call and tell us what the Confederate battle flag symbolizes for you. Is it a proud symbol of Southern heritage? Is it a symbol of racism or slavery? Does it mean something else altogether? We want to hear from you. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And first of all, Ted, as a flag expert, are you surprised to see how heated and emotional this national conversation over the Confederate battle flag has become?
I'm not surprised. Flags evoke strong emotions from people, pro and con. I'm surprised at the rapidity of the response. But the debate and the concerns about the Confederate battle flag have been simmering for 150 years.
Is this the first time in relatively recent history that, the scrutiny of the flag has become so intense? As you said, it's kind of been sizzling, but have there ever been moments where it's kind of flared up like it is now?
Well, certainly, and in different states. In the early 2000s, South Carolina ran into that issue of flying the Confederate battle flag over its state capitol. It had begun flying it in 1961 to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War, but in 1962, probably in response to the budding civil rights movement, South Carolina voted, the legislature voted to keep it on the dome of the state capitol. And that became a strong challenge in about 2000, and the compromise to taking it down from the state house was to move it to the Confederate Soldiers Monument, which is on the grounds of the state capitol, but it's a much smaller flagpole and a much smaller flag, and it's not on the state house. But that was a big debate in 2000.
All right. Let's take a call now from Brian in Naples. Brian, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was just going to say about the Confederate flag that it's a symbol. It doesn't really objectively stand for anything. It's going to mean different things to different people, that it doesn't really have to stand for slavery or secession or sedition or anything like that. Going further, too, that a lot of people are saying that the Civil War was about slavery. It really wasn't. It was just a socioeconomic conflict between the North and the South. It had really, slavery was one part of it. But even Abraham Lincoln himself, if you read his letters, today he would be considered a racist based on a lot of the things that he said about blacks and whites. That's all I've got.
Well, Brian, thanks for the call. And I think you make a good point. We can't really create meaning as far as symbols for what other people think. That's interesting. And I think you made another excellent point in looking at folks from the perspective of the society that they lived in, and would really anybody living back then stand up to moral judgments of our 21st century social. What's socially acceptable and what's not. That's a really good point. Ted, did you want to maybe weigh in on that, just in terms of what folks think and really being able to create meaning decisively?
I think that's true. Flags hardly ever have intrinsic meaning. They have meanings that people attribute to them. And the challenge with the Confederate battle flag is there are two different meanings that people are attributing to it. The shorthand for that is hate and heritage. And the big challenge for the people who see heritage in the flag is that others see hate in the flag. And that's the crux of the challenge. That's almost a play on words, because crux means a cross, and that's the cross on the Confederate battle flag.
All right. Let's look at this from a historical perspective. Did the flag that we are, seeing all the time in the news and in our Facebook feeds now, did that flag in question today really symbolize the Confederacy at the time of the Civil War? Was it any kind of unifying symbol? From what I understand, it wasn't even really flown much except on maybe a few naval vessels.
Well, let me give you just a little bit on Confederate flag history. The first important point is that the Confederate battle flag was never the flag of the Confederacy. The Confederacy itself had three national flags. The first, adopted at the beginning of the Civil War, called the Stars and Bars, which was three horizontal bars of red, white, red, with a blue square in the corner, with a circle of stars initially, seven stars representing the seceding states. That flag was seen as too similar to the Union flag, and so much more popular on the battlefield was the alternative flag that was the runner-up for the national flag design, which was what we now know as the battle flag. That's a square flag with a red background and a blue X on it with white stars on the X, and usually with a white border around it. That's the battle flag. Actually, the battle flag of the Army of Northern Virginia, not the entire Civil War armies of the Confederacy. And that flag was more popular than the national flag. So when they changed the national flag in May of 1863 to look less like the Union flag, it became a white flag with the battle flag, the Confederate battle flag, as square in the upper left-hand corner. The problem with that flag, which had been adopted just in time to grace the casket of Stonewall Jackson, was that it looked too much like a flag of surrender because it's mostly white. So in March of 1865, it was changed again to have a red stripe on the far end of the flag So the national flags of the Confederacy were three. The battle flag was never the flag of the Confederacy. And in fact, it was only truly used to represent the whole Confederacy after the Civil War. That was the flag that the soldiers used to commemorate the Confederacy, and that's what we associate with the Confederacy now.
During the time of the Civil War, from what I had read, just about every regiment kind of had their own version of a flag.
Well, regiments had flags, and certainly the different armies had flags, but the battle flag proved to be the most popular because the Army of Northern Virginia became the most important army, and the flag was spread to the other armies as well. But there's an interesting irony in all of this, and that is the version of the Confederate battle flag that most people fly, that you see flying from an individual's flagpole, is a 3-by-5-foot flag without the white border around it. It's an oblong rectangle, not a square, and that is not the battle flag. In fact, looking at Confederate flag history, that's the Confederate naval jack. That's the flag that flies on the bow of a ship when it's in port. So people who are proudly waving the Confederate flag to honor their heritage are actually flying an obscure naval flag of the Confederacy rather than a national flag of the Confederacy or the true battle flag.
Very interesting, very interesting. We're delving into the national conversation over the Confederate battle flag with expert Ted Kaye of the North American Vexillological Association. And we want to hear from you. What does the Confederate flag represent to you? Should it be displayed outside public buildings? Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And we're going to we'll get some callers on here in just a minute. We've got some phones ringing, working their way through the screening process. But until then, I was hoping you could maybe further untangle some of the history of this flag following the Civil War. How did it come to be adopted by you know other groups like, say, the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, sure. After any war, the people who fought in the war have tremendous association with each other and their experience. And just like there was a veterans group in the North, the Grand Army of the Republic, there were veterans groups in the South, and they used the Confederate battle flag to represent the common bond that they had, the experience that they had lived through and fought under. The Ku Klux Klan did use the Confederate battle flag because it was primarily Confederate veterans who started the Ku Klux Klan, General Bedford Forrest and others. But the Ku Klux Klan, as it petered out towards the end of the 19th century, was revived after the movie Birth of a Nation, in 1915 or so, and the flags that those folks used were more the American flag. The Ku Klux Klan was a nativist group against immigrants and others, and the American flag was more what the Ku Klux Klan used. The real impetus for the use of the Confederate battle flag in American political symbolism is 1948, the Dixiecrat Party, which evolved in the South as a response to the Truman-era integrationist policies, Strom Thurmond leading that and being a presidential candidate in 1948. And that spurred a renewed interest in the Confederate battle flag in the late 40s and the early 50s. And that provided the symbolism for many in the South who were resisting the civil rights movement to have a symbol to use to symbolize that resistance.
All right. Let's take a call from Brian in Moorhaven. Brian, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. You're on the air. Did you have a comment or question to share with us regarding the Confederate flag and this national debate taking place?
A little one. And I normally have this debate in town here, and I try to ease my way out of it because it's such a polarizing thing, you know. And I tell people, just to get away from the racial thing, because, you know, everybody on one side is, oh, it's got nothing to do, it's just my heritage, I'm not, you know, a racist. And I say, well, you know what, take away the offensive part, take away the race out of the equation, just forget, you know, pretend it's not there, and look at the flag as a, you know, it's a group that wanted to secede from the nation. So just in that respect, to me, it's kind of a completely anti-American flag, you know, even without the race issue.
Well, thanks for the call, Brian. Ted, what do you think about Brian's point there? I mean, that I guess that is technically part of the history. It was a failed uprising to secede.
That's an excellent point. What he's saying is that there are two important challenges to the Confederate battle flag. One, that it represents more contemporary white supremacist and racist positions, but two, that it represents the army and the government of what some would consider a traitorous splinter group from the Union. And so it represents a group that waged war against the United States. And so his point is, you don't even need to have the racial dimension to it. There's simply a geopolitical argument against the flag. I think that's what he's arguing.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks so much for the call. Let's hear also from, we're going to go to Erica now. Erica is in Estero. Erica, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Should I just start talking?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I understand you have an experience or a story to share with us.
Yes. When I was growing up in high school, I come from a very rural, pretty much all white town in Indiana. And when I was growing up, I had some friends. I used to go to a church that was very diverse, and I had invited some of my church friends to a high school football game. When they got there, the problem was that there were some people that didn't think they belonged, and they had a rebel flag with them, what we called it a rebel flag. I guess it's a Confederate flag. But they had the flag with them, and they started throwing it, like carrying it around and waving it and calling my friends a lot of racist names. So in my opinion, in my experience, I've had nothing good happen with the rebel flag. I haven't had a positive interaction from it, or seen anybody's confidence built in a way that is supportive to an entire community. I just have seen it help somebody's hatred thoughts. So that's my experience.
Eric, I'm sorry you had that experience. But I did want to ask you, I see you're calling from Estero. Do you think there's something perhaps unique about regions like ours where you do have, you know, folks who have grown up and lived in the South? And then at the same time, there's so many folks here who are transplants from the North. Do you find that you wind up in debates or maybe even just heated arguments with people maybe around the dinner table or friends or just folks you meet about this issue?
Yes, and I think I've noticed since I've been down here that the South has definitely a different take on racial issues than the North. The way they talk about things, even, like, versus, you know, my black friends and my white friends, there's definitely a difference in how they talk about the stories of the past and slavery, where they come from, and even going back to, like, last names and where they get their last names from. It's definitely brought up some conversations that have been interesting, and it's different than the North. In the North, like in Indiana, I mean, as silly as it sounds to talk North and South, there's definitely a cultural difference in how it's viewed and just how the topic is brought up and stuff, too.
Right. Well, thanks so much for the call, Erica. Really appreciate it. Ted, despite the tragedy that this national debate has been born out of, do you think there's something positive about, you know, being able to have these kind of discussions like Erica and I were just alluding to and really kind of bringing things out into the open that maybe folks typically don't talk about?
Well, it may well be that, speaking simplistically, the
people who use the Confederate battle flag as a symbol of their heritage may not fully understand how offensive it can be to others who have seen it be tainted by those who use it as a symbol of hate. And those who truly, in their hearts, are honoring their Confederate forebears and have no hate in their hearts may well see that others have used that symbol in an offensive way, and it's important to understand how that is felt by those other people. That may be a result of this national debate.
Right. Well, let's take a call from Charlie in Naples. Charlie, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. A question to both of you. Isn't this whole issue as just whether it could be flown over government buildings? Is that what? Yeah, but is that that's what the issue is, right?
That's definitely the legal issue taking place in the South Carolina legislature right now. But that I think that brings up a really good point, Charlie. What do you think about that in terms of the flag? Do you think it should be able to be flown on you know public land at state capitals or the?
Well, not. No, I don't think a government. I personally don't like the flag. I don't think it should be flown on government buildings. Personally, I don't think people. But I think to take it away from private individuals or private property maybe might be. I'm not a lawyer. I don't. Might be anti-constitutional. But I do know that, for example, the German government doesn't fly the Nazi flag on their government buildings. And but yeah. So that's my. But personally, I don't like it. But we're allowed to say the N-word. I don't like the N-word, but we haven't outlawed that, and that's me. And some people don't care if it offends other. Some people don't care if it offends other people. But if you can outlaw bad things, then maybe someday they'll start outlawing good things too. You know, the knife can work cut both ways. But I don't know. I'll listen to you guys reply if you have one.
All right.
I think that's an excellent point, that we need to divide the discussion between government sanction of flying the Confederate battle flag, that is, flying it in public places or on public buildings, and, on the other hand, the First Amendment rights of people who want to fly the flag on their own, individuals flying the flag. I believe that the national discussion is focused on government sanction, government support of flying the Confederate battle flag. And it's not nearly around individuals flying the flag. There's an interesting subcurrent going on, though. When an individual flies the Confederate battle flag, it still may be offensive to other people, but that's part of the First Amendment of free speech. However, what's going on is that the nation's flag manufacturers and retailers have said, many of them have said they'll stop selling the Confederate battle flag. So it will become harder to find. People will always be able to find it online, but it will not be as easy to go down to the flag store and buy it. Mm. There are the largest flag manufacturers have said they won't sell it. Amazon, eBay, Walmart, they've all said they won't sell it. At the same time, Alabama Flag and Banner has said we will sell it, and they're doing huge business selling the Confederate battle flag. Here in Portland, Oregon, Elmer's Flag and Banner, one of the largest flag stores in the country, sold out of Confederate battle flags in the first day after the debate. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't been able to restock because its own suppliers aren't manufacturing the flag.
Hmm. Well, let's take a call now from Bruce in Naples. We have a few minutes left here. Bruce, welcome to the program. You're on Gulf Coast Live.
Hey. I'm sorry?
Bruce, you're on Gulf Coast Live. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was saying that if the flag, the symbol, the design of it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So the flag is a rebellion flag. And just like your previous guest that said, you know, you might outlaw some good things if they have done, taking church and state, separated those things, but that's a different discussion. Nevertheless, the flag itself is offensive, and if it's offensive to an American, it needs to be recognized and taken down.
All right, Bruce, thanks so much for your call. Ted, I think he makes an interesting point there, saying, you know, if it's a rebel flag by any design, he finds it offensive. And I was thinking about, you know, other flags that might have some sort of Confederate flag homage paying to it. For instance, you know, here in Florida, our state flag is emblazoned with a red X behind the state seal. Do you know if that red X is meant to symbolize the stars and bars of the Confederate flag in any way?
It appears, in looking through the history, it appears that it does echo the stars and bars, the same with the flag of Alabama, and arguably the flag of Arkansas echoes the, and I should not say stars and bars, that's a mistake. It's the Confederate battle flag. Mm-hmm. Stars and bars is the name of the first national flag of the Confederacy. Some people call the Confederate battle flag the Southern Cross, and that's a good phrase to use. Arkansas, Alabama, Florida echo the Confederate battle flag. Mississippi actually has the Confederate battle flag on it in the upper left-hand corner. And in the early 2000s, defeated a referendum a more than 2-1 margin to change the flag. White and black voters voted to keep the Confederate battle flag on the Mississippi state flag. And that's an interesting sociological study in this day and age. I believe that there will be renewed pressure on Mississippi to change its flag. In fact, in what I think is a first, I've observed organizations like the state of Oregon has considered its 50-state flag display on or near the Capitol grounds in Salem, Oregon, removing the Mississippi state flag, not because it doesn't like Mississippi, but because it doesn't like what's on the Mississippi state flag. That hasn't passed in our legislature yet, but I think it's unprecedented that someone would take it that government is taking offense at the symbolism on the flag rather than the flag itself.
Excellent point. I understand that your book, Good Flag, Bad Flag, actually contains a quote from the National Flag Committee of the Confederacy. Can you tell us about the book and about that connection?
That's right. I compiled a flag that articulates the five basic principles of flag design: simplicity, meaningful symbolism, few colors, no lettering and no seals, and distinctiveness. And those basic principles were actually articulated more or less in the guidelines adopted by the National Flag Committee of the Confederacy as it was going through the hundreds of flags that were submitted as possible national flags for the Confederacy in 1861. Interestingly, William Porcher Miles, who was the chair of the committee, was the author of in favor of what's now the Confederate battle flag being the national flag, but that came in second to the stars and bars. But he had the last laugh as the Confederate battle flag became more popular than the first national flag of the Confederacy. But it's wonderful to see all of the designs that were proposed for the Confederacy. And this brings up a very interesting point in flag scholarship, that we can talk about good flag design and bad flag design independent of what the flag itself represents. There are certain regimes in the 20th century that have had tremendously effective flag design, but their flags themselves represent an odious philosophy. And in the same way, the Confederate battle flag, to some representing heritage and to others representing hate, no one, I think, would argue that it's not a great design as a flag. It's a very effective flag design, the red, the blue, the white, the white edging and such. It's a very effective flag, and I think that's part of why it's in the middle of all this controversy. If it were an ugly flag or a poorly designed, complex flag, it wouldn't have been used as much, mm-hmm. and therefore wouldn't have gotten itself into this arena of discussion.
All right. Well, we are coming up on the end of this discussion, but I'm going to take a final call here from David in Fort Myers. He's been waiting very patiently. David, you're on Gulf Coast Live. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I just wanted to call and talk about the very small but very vocal group that supports the flag and want it to stay on the Capitol building. And I think it's really silly that they're still opposed to it, because it seems like they're acting like there's legislation to ban the flag in its entirety, but I don't think that they understand that that's not the case, and that people are truly just trying to take it off of public spaces where it could be viewed as offensive to some people. And I just think that people really need to see that there is a difference between banning the flag and just taking it off the safe house.
All right, Ted, that's an interesting point there as well. And we did kind of talk about that a little bit earlier in the program as far as freedom of speech. And then, of course, the availability of the flag becoming more difficult with major retailers deciding to pull Confederate flag paraphernalia from their shelves.
Some of the people who oppose taking the Confederate flag down from the South Carolina State House grounds see it as a slippery slope, that if they don't defend it there, it will be chipped away at in other places. That may be part of their of what's driving them.
Sure.
Also, I believe that there are people who legitimately honor their Confederate ancestors and don't see and don't mean anything offensive by the flag. The problem is that it does offend other people, independent of what those people think about their relationship to the flag.
I don't know what it's like there in Oregon, but I can tell you here in Fort Myers, I regularly pass old cemeteries where you see that they're well maintained, and they're folks who were Confederate soldiers and somebody's family, and you almost always see Confederate flag paraphernalia up there. So it does seem to definitely be a source of Southern pride for some folks.
And I think that's a great example of probably the most arguably most legitimate use of the Confederate battle flag is gracing the gravesite of someone who fought and died under it.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, so we are going to leave the conversation there. Thanks to all our listeners who called in and weighed in on this topic, and thanks so much to our guest, Ted Kaye. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Ted Kaye is a vexillologist and member of the North American Vexillological Association. He's also author of the book Good Flag, Bad Flag. We're taking a short break, but when we return, July 28th will mark World Hepatitis Day. Health experts say some 5 million Americans could be infected with viral hepatitis, and many of them don't even know it. We explore risk factors, screening guidelines, treatment options, and public health efforts on hepatitis. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.